Episode 1181. There's Something About Severance, Season 2, Episode 9. The penultimate episode of the season.
That's right. You took the words right out of my mouth. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono. No video this week because we're back in studio.
You know, it's been weeks since you were here.
It has.
The last
2 weeks we couldn't do here.
Has it only been 3 weeks? It feels like 4 weeks.
No.
Three? Okay, so 3 weeks since we've been together. It makes a difference. I like recording in person, although, of course, the videos are fun.
Yeah, I also like recording in person, but I think that this setup we've had going with how to do it remote has actually been working okay.
Yeah.
The only thing that's not working okay is me doing the music. That is a subpar experience.
But could be worse. Do you think can I do the music with that system?
We could figure it out. We just have to, not the way you do it here, though.
Okay.
So it's a little confusing.
Well, listeners, this is happening. One more episode this week. Well, of course, we're going to talk first about episode 9, but episode 10 is later this week, and Ben told me something crazy I didn't know about.
76 minutes long.
It feels like it needs extra time. When I'm sitting there watching these episodes, and let's just talk about episode 9, I'm watching it, and every minute I'm enjoying.
Yeah.
It's just like, I just want more. Of course, you want them to be able to tell their story however they want to do it. But
So you're back on the wagon this week.
Yeah, of course. It was back to the normal Severance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, I love this episode. And it's just like, it's just a show that is so, it's such a pleasure to watch it.
I completely agree. Though so two observations, both related to Severance, but one more tangential before we get to this actual episode. And the second one will tie into what you just said. So last week we had a lot of conversation about Sweet Vitriol and my defense of it. So immediately we recorded on Sunday.
Yeah.
When we finished, I sat down to watch the season premiere of the final season of Righteous Gemstones.
Okay, yeah.
Which I love that show. And the first episode was 100% a flashback, not involving any of the main characters.
Oh, wow.
And it was kind of funny because I had the same reaction that you had, which is that it was a good episode, but I was so disappointed.
Yes, so you understand.
So, like, all my words, but it's also Righteous Gemstones versus Severance.
Right.
I reserve the right to hold them to different standards or to have different levels of trust in the creators.
Do you have a second thought? And then I want to follow up.
I do have a second thought, but go ahead and follow up.
Well, my follow-up is I've been thinking more about our conversation last week about that Cobell episode and then right into this episode. As we watch episode 9, which we're going to talk about right now, it almost felt like they had so much to cover because they lost an hour. I don't know.
You're so wrong. It's so off base.
No, just let me say what I thought. I liked it, and I already said every minute I enjoyed, but it felt like they're rushing to get to everything that they could. Like, it was all over the map, covering every single character to get us all to the right spot for the finale, which is right. But I enjoyed it.
It was a setup episode for sure, but not because they did last week. Like, that I totally disagree.
I'm not saying that is the reason, but you could see how they did it. They haven't focused on the other main characters for two consecutive weeks.
Right.
So all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's catch everybody up and get everything into place for the finale. Like, you can see why they needed an extra episode. Like, I'm not saying it's filler, but it is the extra episode.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so what was your second thought?
The second thought is that I've realized from paying attention to online conversation that there's really two very different camps of Severance fans emerging. The first camp, who were very upset about last week, wish the show was just MDR in the office like season one.
Okay.
And then the second camp, which is the me camp, is the holy crap, this is amazing. Whatever happens, I'm there for it. I think last week aside, you're closer to that second one, but it's amazing that there are two very, very different takes on this show. The first camp is wildly disappointed with this season.
Oh, really? The whole season?
The whole season.
Well, I'm not there, of course. I had one bad episode, and I thought everything else is great. I'm totally where you are. after it was actually after the Orpo episode, I just decided, whatever.
Yeah.
There's no predicting it. Let's just go on this ride.
Have you come around at all on last week after reflecting on our conversation?
I mean, I haven't rewatched it. Let's see how the finale goes, and then I'll rewatch all of season two someday. Not probably anytime soon. And then I'll see how it fits in when you just like... But we both agree that having the week in between, it does something special. So I was about to say, well, when I can end that one and go right to what I like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just, when you watch it all straight...
As long as you're thinking about it in terms of what I like, I don't think you're going to get there.
Well, you're asking me, did I come around? So if you're asking me for my personal feelings, no. Not necessarily personal feelings. But I might enjoy the episode more in hindsight. Like, someday I might like it more, depending on where the show goes.
I would use the term appreciate over enjoy.
That's fine. You can say that.
Well, no, but they're two different things. Yeah. Like, enjoyment is what I like. Appreciate is about the vision of the show.
Well, okay. I think we might just disagree on this one episode. I don't think I appreciated it.
Even after... Like, we talked about last
I think
week?
It had valuable information.
Okay.
That when it comes to the story's mythology, but did I appreciate the presentation? I did not.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah.
What a shame. All right. Getting into this episode, which we both enjoyed and appreciated.
Yeah. I did wonder, what does the episode title mean to it? Whereas a lot of the episode titles are very obvious.
So I know it's a title of a... Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, I haven't watched that. I wondered if there was any connection to the Martin Scorsese film.
That's what I had thought at first, too. But
then it really seemed like there was too much.
No.
If any, other than craziness and surrealism.
Right. Well,
in that sense, maybe.
And the Martin Scorsese film in itself is more of a Wizard of Oz thing than anything else. But title aside, very interesting themes that I saw emerging in this episode, and some of these cross over into other episodes, but here's a number that I would call out that I think will be worthwhile to pay attention to as we go through the conversation. Number one, certainly not unique to this episode, but I noticed it in some new ways. The use of vertical space in the show is, I think, significant. Notably, there is Helena at the beginning going up to have breakfast with her father.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the elevators throughout the show, but vertical space remains important. One thing that I think is very interesting is how the show, and this has been very masterful this season, as we come to the end of the season, there are so many things that have produced so many theories where in reality, it's the straightforward answer, not the theory that emerges. Great case of this, again, with Miss Wong. Like, what's her ring game about? Her ring game is about it was a ring game.
Yeah.
She's a child. And,
yeah. Why is she a child? Because she's in a program for kids.
Well, she's in a cult, right?
Yeah.
Like, which, again, eventually I'll stop defending last week, but probably not. But, like, that alone, like, the what last week did for the character of Miss Wong and making you reevaluate that, and then shot Chaser being that scene this week that we'll talk about in detail.
Wait, what? What did you say?
Shot and Chaser. Said,
I don't know what that is.
Well, if you were an alcohol consumer, you might. Anyway, the point is, like, that scene was a perfect, if last week... I'll rephrase it.
Okay.
Different metaphor. Theory and practice.
Okay.
Last week set up the theory of how Lumen abuses children, and then we saw it with her this week.
And they did portray that character differently. She wasn't
100%.
Menacing. In the past, they portrayed her as menacing.
Yep.
This week, she's a victim.
Yep. Yep. And really, I think that's something we'll notice rewatching the season is that she's been a victim the whole time. The use of language... Specifically, we'll get that in the Milchick scene, but the unique cadence and diction of Lumen is not just a feature of the cult, but it's also a control thing that comes in, and the show's use of language is very, very good. Crossover of ideas from Innie to Outie. I think the most notable one this week is Dylan with threatening to resign, and then his Innie does resign.
Mm-hmm.
That continues to be a strong theme. one thing I noticed that I thought was really, really well done this week, and we could still see this play out, but there was a theme of the other shoe not dropping. In other words, there were moments throughout this episode where you were waiting for the other shoe to drop, the most notable one being Irv, and then it doesn't. Like, I kept expecting Irv to get shot,
mm-hmm.
and he still might, but that not happening. Same thing where the scene where Dylan gets on the elevator and we're just holding, waiting for the doors to shut, and you expect him to you know, block the door. He doesn't.
Yeah.
So there was a strong theme of the other shoe not dropping. I don't know what that means yet, but I wanted to point it out.
You know, I think that for those two characters specifically, well, Irv for sure, I'd say there is a chance, and I say a strong chance, we're done with that character. He's now been written out of the show.
Yeah, I want to talk about that when we get into him. And I have the same thought.
And it seems satisfying. Like, I feel like that's mildly resolved. But I could
there's still some major questions.
I could see a case where he returns in some sort of heroic, like, I've been researching Lumen and I'm here to help you guys. But I think it could be, if let's say there's four seasons and we have no idea.
Yep.
I could see him being God for the whole of season three and then return as a guest star in season four. Okay.
Yeah, there's definitely still, there are questions they have set up that they owe the audience at least a revisit.
Like, why does he know about the elevator?
That, who is he talking to on the phone earlier in the season?
That's true. That's a really good point.
But I think that there's a non-zero chance you're correct.
Okay. Secondly, Dylan, I think there's a chance they could write him out of the show. That we don't know how this season's going to end. Season three could go in a totally different direction, focusing mostly on Mark and maybe Helly or maybe just Helena. Either way, I think we might be moving away from what we've been seeing in MDR, and we're going off somewhere different where Dylan and Irv wouldn't necessarily play a role there.
So I had the same thoughts, exactly. I would say I don't think either one is gone, but I think it's much more likely Irv is than Dylan.
Okay, we agree there.
Yep. All right, two other themes from this episode. The interplay of light and dark. Again, not a new thing, but especially in Helena's storyline, we'll talk about it when we get there. There's a lot, some really interesting usage of the light and dark parts of the severed floor. And then finally, this episode's full of callbacks.
Okay.
So there's the cottages.
Yep.
Right? Like, we have the callback to that. Callback with the ring game. We talked about that. The truck, Mark riding in the back of the truck, just like we saw Cobell do in Sweet Vitriol.
Mm-hmm.
Irving and Bert, their conversation mirrors conversation from season one. Eggs are back so this week. Eggs. Yeah, you know, so it's interesting episode.
The eggs made me think that the things are given as gifts and rewards on the severed floor are just things that the Egan family themselves thinks are very great rewards.
Right.
Like, not everyone might love an egg celebration.
Yes.
But James would.
Right. So, all that to say that you're right. I agree with you. This episode has a lot of setup. But again, I'm going to keep, not that you're criticizing it from that perspective, but some people are. I'm going to keep defending the artistry of this show. Just like last week, this week again, there are things you have to stop and appreciate with how this show is put together, because this is not just a move the pieces into place haphazardly. There are things being done very deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
That said, this episode does contain probably my biggest critique of the show to date.
Wow.
So we're going to get there.
I can't wait to hear about that.
There's the show finally, it's not major, but it finally did something that I consider a misstep.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Okay. So the way I have it divided is the cold open with Helena I want to talk about. There's the Miss Wong and Milchick stuff. And then we can just follow our four different characters, even though the storylines interact a little bit. It divides pretty well. So the Helena Morning one is really, really interesting from a number of things. Number one, I already called attention to the use of vertical space in here, which has a nice callback later if James is coming up from the bottom floor, depending on how we interpret that. Because the exports elevator dings, and then later we see him in the room.
Okay. So what do you mean? Like, is he, you're not saying he's severed? You're saying down on...
Yeah, like, did he... It's kind of implied that when he appears in the MDR room, he came up.
Okay. So what does that mean to you?
I don't know.
Also, I didn't understand his last line. Do you just want to wait to get there?
Yeah, we'll wait to... I'll say, I don't understand any of his lines. I have to turn on subtitles for this actor. Like, I'm not even joking. I turned on subtitles every time he was on the screen because I can't understand him. Okay, so the first thing that I noticed throughout this scene, and I noticed it first when she's swimming laps, is that it goes to the clock on the wall, and the clock is decidedly not a Lumen clock. And you know what I mean by that? Like, Lumen has a distinctive style for everything. That clock doesn't have it.
Was it more modern, or what do you mean?
Yeah, it just doesn't have that Lumen, Apple...
Yeah,
you know, super refined feel to it. Same thing when she goes upstairs and is eating, and we see Jane pouring his tea kettle. It's like this cast iron kettle. Her plate that she's cutting the egg on, that I don't know what the picture of that plate is. It's like two witches surrounding a screaming child. But it's you got to go watch the scene. Yeah. And again, remember how last week we were talking about like in the altar? In Sissy's house, how
like the shrine,
the shrine, the Lumen cult has more of this midsummer folk cult.
Yeah,
you see those elements in this scene in the Egan house, even though the Egan house is very like the Jame compound is very postmodern and it has that Lumen feel to it.
Okay,
the elements in there, the clock, the plate, the kettle, all that stuff is very folksy
inside. The severed floor, just white everywhere, lots of white. The first thing that stuck out to me during the swimming scene is, and this I only watched it once, so you'll have to help me out here. I think her swimsuit is white. The walls are white. I think maybe the clock is white.
The clock's not. That's what draws my...
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just remember thinking there's, for some reason, everything they're showing us in this opening scene is just had a lot of white happening. Do you think that's just supposed to show clean or rich, or is it connecting to the severed floor?
I think it's close to that. Like a lot of that scene, both upstairs or downstairs swimming and then upstairs for breakfast, has that severed Lumen feel to it. But then there are elements that don't. There are elements of the folk cult. So I think they're continuing to lean into that, which is fantastic. I don't know, like, her eating a single egg and the way she was eating that egg, super weird.
And it didn't make him very happy. He was disappointed.
And
this is the first time that we've got a hint that he's maybe somewhat disappointed in her.
No,
right?
No. Second episode of the season.
What did he say?
Fetid Moppet.
I don't remember that. Tell me again. I remember that line, but what was the interaction?
The interaction is he's upset with her.
I thought he was upset with Helly.
But he takes it out on Helena.
Okay, I don't remember that.
I think Jame is full-on crazy because she asks him, won't you eat? And he says, oh, watch! Though I didn't do that Jame.
I'll watch.
Watch! Like he's not only mumbling, but he's doing it entirely with breathy, and you can't hear a thing he says.
You know, sometimes you're watching a movie or a TV show, and you can tell they've put older makeup on a younger actor. And sometimes in a sci-fi show, it would be for the purpose of, let's either do a flashback or let's do time travel or let's de-age this person. And then they just become their regular self.
Right.
So when I see this guy, I get that almost uncanny valley feeling
of, I totally agree.
This is a younger actor who they're making up to look older. But while we're talking here, I decided to Google who plays Jame Egan. And this is what this guy looks like.
Right, he's legit old.
Well, he's older, but he's younger than he was portrayed on screen. But he's not like a young man.
Right. It's not like Guy Pearce in Prometheus.
So I was wondering, are they possibly going to de-age Jame at some point? And I guess that's still possible, although I guess he's probably closer in age than I thought he would be. I expected to find that a young actor was playing an old man because of the makeup or the way they're portraying him as old seems over the top. Like there's something not quite right about his oldness.
I don't know if it's his age, but there's something off about him, including what he says next as she eats the egg sliced into six pieces with a knife and a fork. insane.
Well, I don't really like eggs like that. Would you?
No. I wish you'd eat them raw. Mm-hmm. What? Okay, do you remember what she says in this scene? She says, "We're seen to Mr. Bailiff." Who is Mr. Yes, Bailiff?
I did. I don't know. Do you know?
I do, because I looked it up.
Thank goodness, because this is something I wanted to ask you about. Tell me.
And it kind of makes me rethink an entire portion of this episode. Irving. Irving's last name is Bailiff. Irving B.
Oh, so now tell me the scene again and what you think it means. So what's the interaction there? What's the dialogue? So
it's James to Helena, and she says, "We're seen to Mr. Bailiff." Seen, obviously, having...
You know, like we're going to take care of him.
Yeah. So now, with that in mind, rethink the entire Bert Irving interaction. Because the way it plays out, if you just watch the episode without that line, it feels like Bert is going there of his own initiative, because he feels an attraction to Irving. You know, he genuinely wants to be a good man, mm-hmm. and he gets him out mm-hmm. because he knows Irving's in danger. That still is possible. But what that scene at a minimum changes is that Bert is sent there by Lumen. Yeah. He is there on Lumen orders. So one of two things happens. Either the other shoe is still out there to drop on Irv, or we might see Bert get killed next week.
When the train leaves the station and they hung on that scene,
yeah.
or that shot, I thought the train was about to blow up.
Yeah,
did
totally.
You get that sense?
Well, that and when he's walking towards the train and Bert steps out from behind the column, like he's gonna kill him.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying about like the theme of the other shoe not dropping. This episode kept setting you up for that and not doing it.
We could say here then that you and I speculated, what is Bert's connection to Lumen? Is he one of the founders? He's been around for a long time. It sounds like he's just
a goon.
Yeah, somebody that works for them that like. Take care of, I mean, kill people, beat people up, get rid of people. Like, it seems like so kind of a henchman.
Yeah, he's a hitman type of guy. Yeah. So I think Bert, either there's more to happen there, or Bert is going to get killed.
Not Bert, Irv.
No, Bert. Oh. Either Irv is going to get killed, or Bert gets killed for not doing what he was supposed to do.
Unless he did exactly what they wanted him to do, and just get him out of town.
There is no chance. There is no chance that that's what we're seeing to Mr. Bailiff means. Lumen wants Irv killed.
Wow.
Full stop.
Not great employers.
So Helena gets driven in, which... And this is a light retcon. This is not my criticism. It's fine. But in the pilot episode, we see Helena driving herself. Mm-hmm. Now she has a driver.
Right.
They obviously, it's a little bit of a cheat to hide her identity.
Also, there is that scene. I thought about this week also. I think it might have been episode one or two early in the show. Mark's pulling out of the parking lot and almost hits Helena.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like, watch out. And they have a quick interaction. Well, we now know Mark would have recognized her,
right.
And he doesn't really react at all to the fact that he almost ran over the CEO.
I'll give the show the cheat. It's fine.
Yeah.
And then the last weird thing is just like the show drawing your attention to something in a sinister way, but you have no idea what it means. And it's the shot pulling out from the Cure compound and then centering on the Lumen water tower and then cut to opening credits. Like it's framed as though it's significant, but it doesn't have any significance.
Well, I think the significance is, I don't know that they ever made it clear that James and Helena live right next to work.
That's not right now, because I thought the same thing at first. I thought they're showing work. That's not work. That's a water tower.
But isn't that the water tower by, like, they live next door to Lumen. I think that's the implication.
Is the water tower, have we seen the water tower before?
I think so, but I guess I can't promise you.
I
am pretty sure what we're seeing is their house is just like, like, just follow the driveway down and now you're in the parking lot.
That's what I kind of thought too, but it's not, I was less convinced of that on a second watch.
Okay.
Okay, so as we get into the episode itself, post credits, and I promise we'll go faster through the rest of it.
No, take your time. This is my favorite show right now.
We see a shot an aerial shot of the Lumen compound from a slightly different angle. Mm-hmm. Like we usually come at it head on from the side. It is ovular. It looks like an egg. And it's intentionally framed that way.
So you know how there's so much, we've been speculating so much about fertility and is somebody going to get pregnant? And now we have Helena eating an egg. And now you're talking about an egg shaped. I mean, are eggs clues leading to like reproduction?
I think that's a, so it's interesting. So first of all, we have, it was the Earth slams an egg in the book, right?
Yeah,
in season one. So let's just overanalyze, and I'm admitting it's overanalyzing, the symbolism of Helena slicing the egg into multiple equal pieces. Maybe it's overanalyzing, but boy, does that feel like a severed metaphor. Boy, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I don't know. Well, I don't know what it means.
You know how in the, what you were calling the underworld.
Yes.
Testing floor. Every time Gemma goes into a different room, it triggers a different part of her severed brain.
Yep, yep.
But with Mark, he uses the elevator. He's any Mark that we know. And then he goes into the cabin. And I think the implication is going to be that we're about to see any Mark again, only now he's in the...
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely... Yeah, we know that because he, at the very end of the episode, Devin says, what's the last thing you said to me?
Yes, yes, he's confused. Okay, yeah. So some severed doors and triggers just always lead to the same person. I guess maybe my question is, obviously you don't know the actual mechanics behind it, but how does that work if we have Gemma going through multiple different severed doors and it's changing?
Well, I'm glad you asked because it gives me another chance to talk up last week's episode, because part of what last week's episode did is it established generations of severance, meaning that we start with ether. Oh, I read a really interesting thing. Remember how we were talking about the ether factory mm-hmm. from last week? Somebody pointed out, and I think this is essentially right, that it's not an ether factory in the sense that they make ether. It is an ether factory in the sense that you would say like a union factory, meaning the people who work there are unionized. It is an ether factory in the sense that the people who work there are using ether to get through the misery of what they're producing in the factory.
Oh, well, I did not get that.
I didn't either. But once I read that, it's like, oh, that makes way more sense.
Okay.
And it just doubles down on the tragedy mm-hmm. of the child exploitation that's taking place. So you have ether, that's like
you're saying generations are severed.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like your iPhone 1, iPhone mm-hmm. 2, same type of thing. So what I think that based off of that, and then you have, you know, the early sketches, which is still years and years and years away from where Mark is, and we know that Mark is 10 plus years from the first severed employee being introduced, but we know from Attila that there were severance was taking place, you know, 20 years before that or 10 years before that. So all that to say that you have more and less advanced versions of the severed procedure, and I think that what we're seeing in Gemma is perhaps testing of a more advanced version.
And they do talk about the severance barriers, right?
Correct.
So maybe that's something new.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So as we get into it then, I want to talk about Miss Wong and Milchick. And even though the Milchick Drummond scene and Miss Wong are a ways apart in the episode, I think they go really, really well together. Because I think that part of what we're seeing in the dynamic between them is Miss Wong is a picture for us of who Milchick and Cobell and Natalie and all these people used to be.
You're thinking they all went through the Wintertide
100%, program. 100%. And the scene with Miss Wong, it's like, why is Milchick, why does he have such a lack of compassion? It's because he went through the same thing. And so like there's a sense of, well, I had to suffer through it. You have to suffer through it. One of the things that's really interesting, though, is that this scene with her, it has forward and backward parallels in the show. So where he has her crush the ring toss game, and then again. The backward parallels, of course, to the break room from season one. How do apologies work in the Lumen cult? It's that you do it again and again and again. also a little bit of a backward callback to the performance review. One of those, the show is so doing such a good job of this, of lines that are funny, and then it makes you rethink them in a more sinister way. Like 4 to 6 hours. That's very funny because it's a parody of something we all hate, which is performance reviews. But now it's like there's this creepy dimension that's coming. Oh, it does take 4 to 6 hours because of repetition. Again and again and again. Okay, so those are the backward callbacks. The forward callback is to the scene with Drummond where Drummond apologizes shorter again. You know, all of that. He like it's this demeaning thing, and Milchick finally snaps and stands up to it. But he's not there yet, and so Miss Wong gets the brunt of it. Poor Miss Wong, she's being sent to Norway, I guess.
So that's the last we see of her.
Yeah, I mean,
all these characters are leaving the show.
Right. It does feel. And I honestly, I've seen some people be upset about, you know, they haven't wasted character. Totally disagree. Anybody who thinks Miss Wong is a wasted character is not paying attention, plot or thematic.
Yeah, it's not a waste to explain. She's showing the evil of Lumen.
Right. Like, again, theory and practice. Yeah. Last week is theory. Lumen exploits children. Now you go rewatch the season. You've been watching it in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought it was cute and funny. Like that's what the show's doing so well. It's like making you feel bad about your own laughter, which is great. So the scene of Drummond then is the parallel to this. It's so good. I love this scene.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first
I
of
knew
all,
you would.
It's so good.
I knew you'd love it. And it was the first thing you texted me about.
Devour feculence. Like when he says that, and I love that his rebellion is getting to use big words, which is fantastic. But here's the twist in this. Why is Lumen upset at Milchick about using big words? Because it doesn't quite fit, right? It's like Lumen uses big words all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see, even see it in Cobell of Milchick will suspect chicanery if you don't call in. That's such a great word choice. It's like, it's this way of demeaning Milchick. You're in the cult, but you're down there. We're up here.
Mm-hmm.
We get to use the big words, not you.
Although we still don't exactly know who Drummond is or correct. What his role is.
But we know he's someone of importance. Milchick goes so far as to admit that he's above him on the org chart.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's apologize, I apologize, and then he gets beaten down to, I'm sorry.
This also matches when Milchick was in the mirror.
Yep,
and
exactly.
He kept on saying, grow up, grow.
Yes. And then he goes right back and his rebellion is devour feculence. And then it's maybe even better, though I love that line. He says, to put it monosyllabically, and then I have the exact quote for what he says next, and every word in it is a monosyllable.
Oh, wow.
It's not my fault what Mark Scout does when he's not at work. It's yours. Just, oh!
It is good.
It's so perfect. I love that scene. The rest of the episode was good, but that was my favorite scene
of
the whole
course.
Thing.
Yeah.
I did not catch this, but there's two very interesting framing callbacks to the portrait of Keir pardoning his betrayers, you know, the one we've been looking at.
Yeah.
So the second one, which we'll get to later, is when Dylan is waiting by the elevator and there's a shot of him with that portrait or the painting in the background and his head aligns perfectly.
Oh, really?
With one of them.
Okay.
The other one is here. We get a shot of the balcony and Drummond, who is a very large man, is towering above Milchick, and Milchick is framed so just his head is visible above the balcony.
And you're thinking that ties back to the painting?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they're playing with that painting a lot in this season. Okay. So from here on, I have the storylines broken down by character. Mark, Helly, Irv, Dylan.
Well, obviously, who'd save Mark and Helly for last. So let's just do Irv, Dylan, Mark, Helly, or how
Helly,
are
Mark. Yeah. Yep. Okay. So the Irv stuff is really good, but I also don't have a ton with it, though there is this emphasis on language when, but man, when I, such a weird storyline, because it winds up being sweet, but boy, does it feel sinister the whole way through.
Yes. Well, like you said, you're wondering, is this real?
Right.
And as of now, it seems potentially real.
Have you seen Miller's Crossing?
No.
It's a Coen Brothers movie. John Turturro's in it. And I just kept thinking, I've seen John Turturro take a car ride like this. It didn't go well. Spoiler alert for Miller's Crossing. But man, when Irving's there, and Radar, not such a great watchdog.
No, not at all scared of Bert.
Yes, he was just watching him.
He did let Irv take Radar with him, which I thought was very kind.
It's interesting how the language thing for words comes into play here, too. And that's why I drew attention to it at the beginning of this episode, because they are emphasizing it throughout multiple storylines this week. When Bert says goon, he reads goon in Irving's notes. We never used words like that. With Lumen, it's very specific language. Mm-hmm. So Bert's telling us what we've all kind of been dancing around for a while.
And you said there's more story to be told with Irv, because we don't know why was he investigating in the first place. Well, these notes are evidence of some investigation he's been doing prior to season one, and probably in the middle of season one. We just never saw it.
Correct. So now all of that doesn't mean that John Turturro is required. It's possible John Turturro's out. But there's gaps to be filled in.
Who was he talking to on the phone?
Exactly. And I will say, if the show never answers that, I would consider that a problem. They have to, now, I reserve the right to evaluate that based on what the answer looks like. I don't need everything spelled out. But there's a difference between not answering everything and leaving some things ambiguous and encouraging the audience to ask a question and then just leaving it, especially within the same season. So that tells me that there is at least more planned, because it's not like, well, last season they set that up and then John Turturro decided he didn't want to come back or whatever. No, you had control within this whole season. So it's okay to leave things unanswered. It's not okay to tell the audience you should be wondering what the answer to this is and then pulling the rug out and never revisiting it. So I'm sorry to pick on Lost, but that's where Lost went wrong with a lot of its mysteries.
Last season, I wouldn't say heavily featured, but featured in multiple episodes, Petey's daughter. And I said to you, I bet she becomes a main character in season two. Well, she did not.
She did not.
So do you think that was, I'm not saying lost opportunity, but was that something where they were putting too much attention on a character who didn't mean anything?
No, because Petey's daughter, if you go back and rewatch season one, she fulfills a purpose there. And that purpose isn't to make you wonder what's her backstory. Her purpose is what she does to Mark and the way she makes him question things.
What about, speaking of Mark, the doula that he dates? She was in a few episodes and disappeared.
Nothing. No, I think, again, it's like all of those characters, you could conceivably do more with them, but their purpose in the plot in season one is to make Mark question things, reevaluate himself, his choices, and they serve that purpose.
Okay.
So I don't consider those in that category. When Bert says go for a ride with me, I don't have a ton more on this. Like it's well done, but I didn't see a ton to dive into.
It just seemed like he was going to kill him the whole time.
Exactly.
Because why is he telling him so much? Unless he does have feelings, and maybe he does.
Yeah. So it's one of two things: either the other shoe's still going to drop, or Bert is genuinely trying to redeem himself.
Or he just has feelings for Irv, and he's acting on those feelings. And it's not about redeeming himself. He just cares specifically about Irv.
But he has a quote, and I didn't write it down.
Although he does have a husband.
He does. Poor Fields. He has a quote in there about something about wanting to be a good person, or something that brings in the redemption.
He said that we saw this during the Fields dinner, and then again here. The whole reason he became severed is because he wanted a chance.
To feel innocent. Yep.
Yeah, he wanted a chance at redeeming himself. So that is a theme of that character.
Yeah, and that's where, if put it in this binary, he's either lying to us and Irv, or he's genuinely trying to do the right thing. if he's genuinely trying to do the right thing, it's not just because he has feelings for Irv. It is morally motivated by his desire to be a better person, because they've set that up too much in that character for that to not be the case. I think it's probably that, and I think he dies next week because of it.
Bert.
Yep.
Okay.
But we'll see. Okay. Dylan and Gretchen. Man, this was a heavy hitter.
Yes. It did not go where I thought it was going to go.
So remember I was talking about the theme of this season and this episode as well being about take the straightforward over the theory. The show's really good at getting all of us to theorize and then saying, oh, it was actually the straightforward thing. This Gretchen storyline's a perfect example of that. We're all like, there's no way it's going to be his wife.
Yeah.
And it was. The show knows when to be convoluted. And I use that in a neutral way. I'm not saying that as a bad thing. The show knows when to be complex and convoluted, but it also knows when to just give it the most straightforward answer. No, that is his wife. And now you're going to watch that play out in a way that's just devastating for everyone involved. Yeah. He reminds me of how you used to be. How? Like, what do you even do? I mean, so Audie Dylan seems like he's kind of a mess.
Yep.
He doesn't seem like a great husband. Well, how do you even begin to process that statement if your wife says that to you about another man and then add on the layer that the other man is you?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do with that?
It goes back to what you and I talked about, which is these innie versions of the characters are sort of their base natures before the impact of the world around you and your choices. So who we're seeing is maybe their most true selves, the innie versions.
Yep. The meeting between Gretchen and innie Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap, what a character arc. Think of how old Dylan was when we first met him. It's all about, you know, the prizes and everything else. And the fact that he destroyed his finger trap to make an engagement ring for her.
Yeah.
it's funny, but it's also for this character who has nothing in his life.
Mm-hmm.
This is his whole life. Mm-hmm. That's like the ultimate sacrifice.
When he says, I can give you a life, what does he even mean? He cannot. He just is desperate.
Yep. That's my read on it.
Yeah. When he cries out to her.
It's horrible.
Yes. It's very real.
He should be, because I'm making you happy and he's not. Referring to his Audie.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing else. Wow. Yeah. I mean, this is so devastating. Like, that's where I think Lumen's introduction of the family wing was meant to be manipulative, not cruel. But Dylan seeing his son during the OTC in season one is the cruelest thing that Lumen did to him.
Well, it set him, that was the catalyst that sent him down a path to suicide, essentially.
Right.
And it wasn't as, I felt like it was a little underplayed compared to what we saw with Irv earlier this season, where Dylan's trying to stop him from quitting because that's the end of his life.
Yeah.
And now with Dylan, when he goes in the elevator, essentially he is killing himself. And now we've seen, of the four main characters, three of them have tried to kill themselves innies.
Right. But it's like, you know, giving this character a taste of what he could have robbed him of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Totally devastating. It's just an incredible arc. So his conversation with Helly is great. And it's, again, this line between tragedy and comedy, but more emphasis on the tragedy here. But when Helly tells him to give it to someone you meet down here, it's just O&D and the goat people. Slim pickings. Okay, but let's analyze this a little bit. Dylan is obviously in total despair here. But Helly, here's where I think they're doing with her character. I think she means it.
Means what?
That he should give it to somebody he meets down here, because I think Helly is developing into her Audie's exact opposite, meaning she is becoming an innie extremist.
I don't exactly understand. Tell me more what you mean.
So she says something to the effect of, you know, she doesn't, referring to Gretchen, she doesn't love you. She's just an outie.
Okay.
Like Helly is developing a strong innie bias.
Okay. Pro innie.
Pro innie. And the theme of the show is reintegration, mm-hmm. the total self. So just as the outies are, you know, behaving badly towards the innies, I think that what we're going to see Helly go down is a very dark path that results in her becoming an extremist from the other direction. I think that's what they're setting up.
Okay, yes, because we know, well, we would imagine Helly can't end up with Mark because Mark is married.
Right.
So you think Helly is going to go into a darker character.
Yeah.
Maybe as an antagonist to Mark.
Right. An antagonist to anybody who has an outie.
And then that would make the line that Dylan says, which is, he couldn't tell the difference between you.
Yeah.
Even more strong. Like, she needs to be her own person.
Oh, yeah. When Dylan says, you know, it's your fault we're down here, she's just perplexed by it, mm-hmm. because Helly is the most severed person on the show. Like, everybody else, Mark's obviously reintegrating. Irv and Dylan are going through their own path of kind of crossover. Helly has completely separated herself from mm-hmm. her outie persona,
mm-hmm.
just completely.
Yeah,
and that's when
I don't know exactly how that will play out, but I see what you're saying. What you're gonna say, that's when what?
That's when we get the lines of, you know, how come if you're so different, how come none of us could have noticed when you were gone? Irving could, Mark couldn't.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. His resignation scene, Dylan's resignation scene, first of all, Milchick chastising him because it reeks of ingratitude is funny.
Yeah.
But then Miss Wong's apology. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Just like.
And she knows she's leaving at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
I should have facilitated better. Like, again, funny, but also now that not funny because now we're realizing that this is an abused child who is part of a cult.
And this child thinks that somebody's dying because of her.
Yeah.
Or committing suicide, if you want to think of it that way.
Exactly. It's great. I wonder how long he was waiting by the elevator. Oh, no. All right, should we move on to Helly?
Remind me from the beginning of season two, they have new rules there, so it's easier to resign than it used to be. So, because Irv also tried to leave, and it was going to be allowed. So, by Dylan filling out this paperwork, is this a done deal? Or, as with season one, could the Audi say, no, I don't accept your resignation?
Yeah, I would assume that, but I would say, so you meant, now that we've talked about Irving and Dylan, I'm going to put the odds that we're done with Irv at 25%.
Only 25? I think at least for the season, we've seen the end of Irv.
Yeah, for the season, quite possibly. But for the show, 25%.
I can agree with that. I could see them, if he's alive, reintroducing him in a later season as a guest star. That's how I imagine him.
For Dylan, less than 1%.
Right.
I think there's virtually no chance.
I just don't know. There's two things I don't know. Number one, where are they going next season, and does it allow for Dylan to continue as a character? And number two, if he does stay, what's the story for him going forward?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. What happens if he reintegrates? Maybe Cobell goes on a reintegration streak.
Maybe. I mean, that would make, actually, of everything we've talked about with Dylan, that makes the most sense. What's next? Let's get you some help on the inside.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Helly. So I mentioned Helly going into dark rooms. This happens three times in this episode. The first time is when she goes into MDR and nobody's there. She flips on the lights. The second time is when she goes into the break room. And then the third time is when she's sitting in MDR and James comes up behind her. Helly is constantly going into dark rooms in this episode. Okay. I don't know what it means, but I just need to follow attention to the symbolism.
So she's memorizing the direction. She's going to go to the elevator that's taking you down to the testing floor. And when James shows up, I can't remember his exact line. Hopefully you have it. Do you have it?
I do. But first, let's talk about her confrontation with Milchick, which is great.
Remind me. I do.
So she comes in, demanding to know where Mark is. He calls her out for insubordination. Helly R. Don't you mean Helly E?
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a great power play.
Yes, it is. And why Helly R? Is it just to throw people off?
It must be like she's the only one who doesn't have her real initial there. Unless the R stands for something else, but it seems to just be to further obfuscate.
R could stand for real.
It's true. But that was a great power dynamic scene. Helly basically like,
I'm your boss.
She knows she's in every other way. She wants her Audi at as much of an arm's length as possible, but not here.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I mean, could she throw her weight around down there? Would Milchuk have to listen to her?
I think she's going to find out.
Okay.
Okay. So Jame coming up, if he does in fact come up.
What do you mean if he does?
Like from the exports hall. Oh, okay. If that's.
Either way, he's there.
He's there. And of course you don't know what he said because you have to turn on subtitles.
Let me try to remember. It was something like, you disappointed me or what? It was something that like seemed to indicate we should know what he's talking about, and I had no idea. What was
he
it like?
He said, you tricked me.
Yeah, you tricked me, yeah.
He's referring to season one finale. Oh. Helly.
I didn't even think of that.
Right, because you have to go all the way back.
Oh.
But he's confronting Helly.
Finally, after a season.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, man.
Such a great cliffhanger.
Well, I think they're going to get along. I actually think they're going to get along great.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be at
odds. You don't think so?
No, I think Helly, but he did say he wanted to kill her. Like,
he was
mad after, yes.
So
I think that, I'm going to just go on a limb and say, after they work it out, they're going to get along.
All right, prediction time. So we saw... In the intro for this season, which we've learned and now talked a lot about how whatever Ben Stiller said about it was just random, total lie.
Right.
Which credit where it's due.
Yeah.
Right, hats off to them. I'm glad they're lying to us. That's what they should be doing. In that sequence where we see the down elevator, it goes to it's Miss Casey.
Yeah. Flickers back and forth.
Flickers into Helly.
Helly. Yep.
So Helly is going to be abducted down to the underworld, and next week Mark has to choose which one he rescues.
Wow. Mark, it will have to be Indy Mark, because then there's a battle. No. Because for Audi Mark, there is no battle.
It's integrated Mark.
Oh, is he integrated now?
I think he will be.
Okay, that's a good prediction.
And of course he chooses Gemma until Helly reveals she's pregnant. That's what I think is going to happen.
Could it be already, though? How many days have been since the ARPO?
I don't know.
It hasn't been,
a month. I'll let the show cheat for that.
Okay.
I don't know. Or they could just be lying to him.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yes. Well, we have opposite viewpoints then. You think she's going to be punished in the testing floor. I think that Jame and Helly are going to become allies.
I see 0% chance of that, of them becoming allies.
Okay.
They're diametrically opposed. One last part to the prediction to bring it all together. Mark will, of course, rescue Gemma, facilitating Helly's descent into the extremist.
Okay. Faction. Wow. So you really see that happening. That's great.
Now, I fully expect to be completely wrong.
Yeah. By next week, who knows?
By next week,
they might be outside
again. None of that will have happened. But that's my current prediction.
I mean, the next episode could start with 5 years later.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. That just leaves us with Mark. So Mark's in a sassy mood with Devon.
I love it though.
I like their banter where she says the wind was that the wind whistling over the hole in the back of your skull. All right. This sequence though is where I get my complaint.
Okay.
One very minor complaint.
The Devon and Mark sequence.
No, the whole Mark storyline. Very minor complaint. First, and then I'll get to the actual one. The minor one is that all I could think when they drove off the road is how stuck their car would be. Sorry.
That is minor.
Minnesota, you don't just do that.
Okay.
Even if they ostensibly have four-wheel drive, that car is stuck. Okay. It's not getting out. Doesn't matter. Here's the actual complaint. And the show could still rectify this next week. Mystery box shows... which Severance is much more than a mystery box show, but it is that too, get into trouble when they artificially withhold information from the audience.
Okay.
Lost, and I'm sorry to pick on Lost,
okay,
but like every other episode of Lost with somebody saying, I don't have time to explain to you. It's like, you guys are on an island.
Yeah.
All you have is time.
Yeah.
You're stranded. Yes, you have. The only reason somebody is saying, I don't have time to explain it to you, is to artificially withhold information from the audience. So the fact that we have Cobell and Mark and Devin standing around for the whole day, and we get none of the answers that we know Cobell has,
yeah,
is artificially withholding information from the audience, and I don't like it.
I agree with that. Yes, there was, even at the smallest level, it felt like there should have been a quick conversation about why Gemma.
Cold
Gemma.
Harbor,
oh, yeah.
Gemma,
yeah, when she says, yep, Cold Harbor, no one's going to ask, well, what does that mean? Yeah. There were a few things where it felt like this should have been discussed for us.
Now, likely, we get that answer next week.
Yeah.
Okay, so if that's the case and it's just a matter of we need to cheat a little to withhold it to next, yeah, week, I'll let it go.
Yeah.
It's fine. But I'm just calling attention to it because when these shows go off the rails, that's why.
Okay.
And when you start doing that, you start to violate your contract of trust with the audience. I'm not saying Severance is doing that, but it's the first warning indicator I've had in that direction.
And it was noteworthy. I, yep, thought of it also. As they're, yep, they're standing there and he doesn't ask the basic question of, why did you take my wife?
Exactly. Like,
how did I think she was
you
dead?
Have somebody who has all the answers.
Yeah.
It's like the Benjamin Linus dynamic in Lost. When it's somebody who ostensibly has all the answers,
yeah,
and nobody's asking the question.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
You know, Ben Stiller said he's never watched Lost, and he wasn't exactly familiar with the mystery box,
yeah,
storytelling method. I can't remember if he said he wasn't familiar with it until he started working on Severance, or... Anyways, the main point is that he wasn't necessarily going for, yep, that vibe. It just... I think... You, yeah, can't help but fall into it a little bit with this type of show.
Totally. So, again, let's see how next week goes. But there are answers we should have gotten from Cobell this week. I will forgive it if it's just to save them for the finale.
So what
but
do
if
you,
it's cheating beyond that, I don't accept it.
What do you feel like we need to learn next week to be fair to the audience? Definitely what Cold Harbor is.
100%. Cold Harbor, Cobell should be able to explain what MDR is doing.
Okay.
I do think we get both of those.
Wow.
How could we not?
We have to learn about Gemma.
We have
Gemma,
to learn,
right,
about Gemma.
So yes, those three things.
Yep.
What is Cold Harbor? Why did they take Gemma? And what exactly is MDR doing?
Correct.
And if those three things aren't answered next week, you're going to feel like...
I reserve the right to evaluate based on what next week gives us.
Yeah.
Like, well, technically, they didn't quite answer question two. So, I'm not going to do that. But yeah, I'd say... In the broad strokes, based on what we know now, I would expect answers to those questions next week.
Okay, good.
Okay, so Cobell arrives. She asks Mark how he is.
I love his response.
My wife's being held prisoner by Lumen, and I just had brain surgery in my basement. How have you been?
Yeah.
Just a great response. Now, I just criticize the show for Cobell withholding information, but she does say one important thing that confirms what we've all kind of been suspecting. If you've completed it, meaning Cold Harbor, she's already dead.
Yes. I did kind of forget about that, but yeah. So what do you think that means? That she's being held?
But exactly what we've kind of felt like, because they're saying to Dr. What's-his-name, Maurer?
Maurer.
You'll have to let her go. It's like... It seems like they're saying she's going to die once Cold Harbor's completed, but they haven't come out and said it, so now they've come out and said it. And that does up the stakes for next week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bummer. I thought that maybe they would sever her and let her back into the world.
Yes.
But I guess they did have a dead body that was identified as her. You can't just let that person come back into the world.
Yeah. So the call to Milchick is great. Because this is a moment in Milchick's character development,
mm-hmm,
where he considers a concept he has never thought of before in his entire life. And that concept is a personal day. Like, this was very funny, but also tremendous acting. When Mark says, I just needed a day. Work is just work, right? And the way the actor plays this for Milchick, it's like he... A thought just hit him that has never entered his brain until this exact moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, A, great performance. B, very funny. But C, thematically, it's again the depth of the cult. Like, he has grown up in this thing, which I think we can say pretty definitively at this point. He is so brainwashed by this cult that an idea as basic as sometimes you need a personal day to just take care of things is completely foreign to Milchick. It's fantastic. Yeah. All right, so now we get back to the cottages. We learn that Jame is a little bit randy.
Yeah, so were they indicating that people often bring pregnant women that Jame impregnated there, or were they indicating that he's often going there to have affairs?
No.
She's
one of Jame's.
So lots of babies being born to that dad.
James may have single-handedly doubled the population of Kyr based on how this is going. So the more we learn about James...
Wait, is that important besides him just being...
No, I think it's just creepy.
I actually think it might be more than that.
We'll see.
Like, he might need his genetic line to be very available.
I'm not terribly convinced by that. I think it's more of just like it's a feature of cult leaders that they're kind of sexually creepy. And then the shot of
Cobell knowing the password to get there,
right?
Do you think it's possible that she was ever one of those pregnant girls?
I think there's a very strong possibility
because in her job, why would she need to know that password exchange?
Oh, this is a great opportunity to talk up Sweet Vitriol. So obviously it's like, the question is, how does Jame steal Cobell's stuff? There's a whole backstory there.
You think they might have had a relationship?
I think it's heavily implied based on what you just pointed out and last week.
Okay.
So, I've seen some people criticize the fact that they didn't prepare Mark for walking in to see Cobell by the fire frame like the Eye of Sauron. Okay, if this was a documentary, Devin would have been like, hey, Cobell's in there. But you got to give the show its artistry.
It is a drama.
Let it have its art. It's earned those moments, and it was a really well-framed shot. Mm-hmm. And then how about the show? The cliffhanger of season 1, episode 9 is Mark saying, she's alive. The cliffhanger of season 2, episode 9 is Mark saying, she's alive.
Another mirror.
It's fantastic.
It has so much doubling.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I
was thinking about that this week, that yes, we see characters being doubled, but we've also pointed out themes scenes.
Yep.
They're mirroring things throughout the show, not just the people.
100%.
Although they really amped it up for season 2.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's fantastic. So next week it's the big one, 76 minutes. Which last season's finale was the shortest episode of the season.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's 37 minutes, and it's timed exactly to be how long the OTC lasted for.
I was thinking about something. They drop in all these little characters along the way. So, for example, we meet all the people in mammalian neutrability.
Yeah.
And in the opening of the show, we see that place, and we see Cobell looking over it. The feel of the show is there's no reason to go back there at this point. It was fun to stop in, and maybe we'll be back again later, but I don't see it showing up in the last episode. But because of the Cobell overseeing the Severance Floor in the opening and what we've seen so far, what do you think? Is there a chance that
of course
there's like a running, we're running through the office and we're in that area?
Maybe, okay. I've been making predictions.
Yeah.
I expect them all to be wrong. So they're, I'm not going to be offended when they're not right. But here's one more for the road. The cold open will be in the goat people room.
Okay. There. Perfect. Yeah. I think I could see a world where we don't revisit them this season, but it would be a shame to not see them one more time.
Yeah. We are, as we stand here,
3 days.
74 hours away from the finale being on.
I can't wait.
I am very excited.
Should we do an initial reaction virtually and then come back for the full one, or just wait and do the full one?
Either way is
fine.
Let's
think about it. Well, it depends what happens. If the show ends unexpectedly, because I predicted earlier this season that what if they wrap up the story in season 2 and they surprise us?
So give a percentage.
No, low.
Very low.
10 or less.
Under 1.
Oh, I'd say there's a 7% chance that the show ends in the next episode.
7. Okay. Well, either way, it's not going to happen. I am waiting for Apple to come out and demand the Young Irving story or something like that.
Don't do it.
You know that there's talks of spinoffs. There's got to be.
Not yet.
Oh, this show's huge.
Yeah, it is huge.
This is the biggest thing Apple's ever done.
I think they should announce seasons 3 and 4 done at 4.
I agree.
It feels like that's how long the show should be.
Yeah. I feel like four seasons plus or minus one is the right length for prestige drama.
Also, even number seems like there's some mirroring that could happen.
Yeah.
Like season three could mirror two and season four could mirror season one.
Yeah.
There, close that thing up. All right, listeners, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DeVoe.
And we're the Sci-Fi Christian signing off.
Goodbye.